And this is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and myself, Mimi Rosenberg.
As the saying goes, something's rotten in Denmark. And we figured out what it is, why it's the Trumpium tax plan.
Probably wasn't fair to blame it on Denmark.
Liar, liar, pants on fire. See you squirm, see you perspire. Not a word you say is true. There's never been one out of you. Smoke and mirrors, bait and switch. You and your friends are getting rich. Picking pockets, pulling strings, and other more despicable things. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Preaching only to the choir. Photo op in front of the steeple. How did you manage to fool these people? You talk the lingo, dress the part, even put your hand over your heart. Bomber jacket, emperor's clothes. You can't even reach the end of your nose.
Every time I hear Donald Trump's name, I feel like saying liar, liar, pants on fire. And despite being somewhat infantilized by doing it, it has a certain gratification. But instead, we'll go to another saying, which is something's rotten in Denmark. And we figured out what it is, why it's Trumpian's tax plan. When Trump said that the biggest winners under his new tax plan will be the everyday American workers as jobs start pouring into our country, as companies start competing for American labor, and as wages start going up at levels that you haven't seen in many years, you might have suspected he was lying, lying, pants on fire, because, well, his lips were moving. I don't deliver jokes well, but that is the nature of our presidency. But some corporate media give credence to the idea that this GOP tax plan is one for the little guy. So we'll talk taxes with economist Dean Baker of the Center for Economic and Policy Research.
And Dean, welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's continue on with that statement that Mimi made in the introduction about this tax plan leading to higher wages for American workers. Do you think so?
No, simply. Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's continue on with that statement that Mimi made in the introduction about this tax plan leading to higher wages for American workers. Do you think so?
No, simply. You know, this is kind of incredible because if you think of, you know, the old Charlie Brown, Lucy in the football routine where she's holding the football for Charlie Brown and he goes running up to it and pulls it away at the last minute, and she does it again and again and again, and she goes, no, this time, Charlie Brown, I really mean it. This time, you know, I'm going to hold it, and you're going to kick it over the goalpost. And each time she pulls it away, and she goes, I couldn't resist or whatever. And we've done this. We've done this. We had big tax cuts under Reagan. There wasn't any big boom. We had big tax cuts under George W. Bush, and the economy collapsed. I'm not saying that's why it collapsed, but obviously there was no boom from the tax cut. And to say we're going to do this again and we're going to see this boom, it just doesn't make any sense. And there's a lot of research on this. I'm just, you know, we could refer back to those prior two tax cuts, but there's a lot of research. Their basic story is that cutting corporate tax is magical, that if we cut the corporate tax rate, suddenly firms will go out and invest like crazy. And that was one of the things, actually, in the 86 tax cut, we did cut the corporate tax rate. We cut it from 46% to 35%. So we actually did that, and the late 80s were the slowest period of investment in the whole post-war era since World War II. So we've tried that, and the logic is supposed to be that countries that have low corporate tax rates should have a huge amount of capital because they have a high return on capital, so there's going to be a lot of investment. And I and other economists have looked at that. You don't find that relationship at all. It doesn't come close to fitting. In fact, it seems to go somewhat the other way. But it's a point being, there's just no evidence for that claim whatsoever. So what we're talking about is a big cut in the corporate tax rate. A lot of other cuts that tend to overwhelmingly benefit, guess what, people like Donald Trump, or I should probably just say Donald Trump personally. I mean, it almost was, looks as though it was designed for Donald Trump. And for ordinary people, people earning $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year, basically nothing. Some will win, some will come out a little ahead, and a lot will lose. So for the ordinary working person, you can't count on anything here.
Dean Baker, the Republicans are telling us that cutting in the corporate tax rate will lead to a huge, a big $4,000 pay increase for ordinary workers. The story goes that lower taxes will lead to a flood of new investment. This will increase productivity, and higher productivity will be passed on to workers in higher wages. So you've started talking about that already, but a little circuitously. So, hey, I'm going to get my $4,000?
Yeah, well, I went to, you know, buy a new car or something based on getting that money in the bank. Again, we've had, 86 was the best example, you know, where we did have a very large cut in the corporate tax rate from 46 to 35%. So it was a very large cut. This actually will be in many ways a smaller cut because we're starting at 35, but as the ostensible tax rate, the nominal tax rate, but the actual tax rate, what do corporations actually pay in taxes, the average is around 22-23%. So the tax cut we had, the cut in the corporate tax rate we had in the 80s is actually much, much larger than what we're talking about today. And again, there was no huge surge of growth. So the idea that we cut the tax rate, the nominal rate from 35 to 20%, probably lowering the effective rate to something like 14%, that's going to lead to some huge spurt of growth. There's literally no reason to believe that will be the case. And in terms of corporations not responding to their after-tax profit rates, because again, that's what the question is here, we had a huge surge in the after-tax profit rate ever since the Great Recession. So if you look at what's happened to profits from, go back to, say, 2000 to the present, their share of the economy has hugely increased, and yet again, investment has been, maybe you don't want to say weak, but has been mediocre. It's not been exceptional at all. So why do we think if we made the after-tax profit rate even stronger, even higher, then suddenly the investment will come flowing forth? I mean, again, this is Lucy in the football. It's just how much more money do we have to give to rich people with the expectation that this time there'll be some huge surge of investment with a big dividend for everyone. It's a little hard to believe.
Well, quite a bit, according to Paul Ryan, because it seems like in addition to the corporate tax rate, there's a whole bunch of other provisions that may increase the profits for the 1%, but especially, I think, the inheritance tax. You want to talk about those things?
Yeah, the inheritance tax, state tax, they're proposing to get rid of this. And just to be very clear, because they sow a lot of confusion on this, they say, oh, it's not fair to small business people. No small business person pays the estate tax. The estate tax, if you have a couple, you could exempt roughly $10 million from any tax whatsoever. So the idea that you have a small business person, someone with their corner store or something, a restaurant, a small restaurant, that they've managed to accumulate a state of $10 million, that seems pretty unlikely. It almost contradicts the idea of a small business. So, and just to be clear, that's always net, because sometimes people will say, well, you could have a firm that's worth $10 million. Well, you can, but odds are you have some loans against it. So if you had a farm that has, say, the value of the land was $12 million, but you had $3 or $4 million in outstanding debt, then the estate's only $8 or $9 million, no tax. So the idea that this affects small business owners, it really is just nonsense. This is 0.2% of estates are subject to the estate tax. These are the richest people in the country. And basically what they're saying is they want these people to be able to pass down enormous wealth. I mean, even if they paid the estate tax, think of Trump himself. He claims he has $10 billion. That's probably a lie, but whatever. Could say is $10 billion. So if he pays the estate tax, that's going to be roughly half that, we'll say. So $5 billion for his four kids, I guess he has. So they're stuck with $1.25 billion each, and we're supposed to feel sorry for them?
Could you take us through some of the issues that seem to have been peeking out, which is concerns about the deductibility of state and local taxes and what that means for the working class, the middle class?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I was saying how the tax seems, his tax cuts seem to have been designed to help him personally. You mentioned the estate tax. I also was going to mention this issue of pass-through business income.
Right.
Trump, at least from his tax return that was disclosed, his 2005 return, all his income, or virtually all of his income, came through pass-through businesses. These are businesses that don't pay tax themselves. They pass it through to the owner, in this case, Donald Trump. And they have a special low tax rate there. So currently that money's taxed just like ordinary income. If you're a doctor, you're a lawyer, you'd pay 39.6% tax. He has it with pass-through income, you only pay a 25% tax. So that's a great deal for him. So there's a few other things in there I could go into that, as I say, they almost look like they're written for Donald Trump personally. I don't think they were, but you can't rule that out. The other side of this, it looks like it was written to screw blue states, to screw states like New York, screw states like California. State and local income tax is a great example that New York has relatively high income taxes, California has relatively high income taxes. In general, the more democratic, more liberal states have higher income taxes for the simple reason that they're trying to provide better services for their population. They have better health care, better education. In general, they provide a better level of service. So what this tax plan does is say, okay, if you do that, you're going to pay a real high price for it because we're no longer going to let you deduct that against your income taxes. So you're going to have a lot of people in New York State, a lot of middle-income people, your average working person, they're going to be looking at higher taxes because they're no longer able to deduct what they pay to the state of New York or the city of New York from their income taxes.
Dean Baker, actually, why don't you take us through some of the most onerous considerations that you've been able to glean thus far as pieces of the plan were specifically are just coming to light?
Well, there's a lot of things that are a little bit technical, but they're really hard to justify. I'll just mention a couple of the things here because, you know, again, I was joking about this is designed for Donald Trump. And again, some of these things look like literally they were. They put a cap on the amount of deductibility of interest for corporations. So this has been an issue that a lot of us have raised. It's a good policy to cap the amount of interest that that firms could deduct because it's a incentive to have highly leveraged businesses. Private equity does this, and they're more vulnerable to downturns, more likely to end up in bankruptcies. So they put a cap on that, but then they say it doesn't apply to real estate. Well, of course, Donald Trump's in real estate, and that's actually where you do have a lot of the most highly leveraged transactions. So it basically opens this huge loophole that if people want to take on a lot of leverage, they basically could do that by separating out real estate from other aspects of the business and do the borrowing against real estate. Another thing, and again, this is a little technical, but probably worth mentioning, just showing how they, again, seem to have designed something for Donald Trump, a way that a lot of businesses get around paying taxes on capital gains, businesses and individuals, is that they do what are called like-kind transactions. So you trade this business for that business. So maybe my business has doubled or tripled in value. If I were to sell it, I'd pay a big capital gains tax. I trade it for your business. Neither of us pays a capital gains tax. They get rid of that, except for real estate. And probably 90 or 95% of those transactions are in real estate. So I trade my office building for your apartment building. They, you know, again, of course, Donald Trump is in real estate. So there's a number of things like that. But those are some of the shenanigans. But in terms of what's going to hit people, we talked about the state and local income tax. They're limiting the property tax deduction. They're also limiting the mortgage interest deduction. Not necessarily a bad policy, but again, if you're talking about hitting people in New York and California, you have a lot of high-priced properties there. People might buy them with a $700,000-$900,000 mortgage. They're going to cap the amount of principal that's deductible at $500,000. So that will be a big hit. And let me just mention one that seems almost gratuitous. It just, you sort of go like, what were they thinking? One of the deductions that you have in the tax code is for medical expenses.
Yeah.
And this is only going to affect people who have some pretty high bills because you can't begin to take it unless your medical expenses exceed 10% of your income. So you're going, who has medical bills that are that large? Well, some people are just a little bit over, but you have a lot of people that are way over because they have things like cancer, heart disease, people have serious surgery. So now they could deduct that. In many cases, people get bills that could run $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, and that could be for a middle-income person, might take up a very large share of their income that year. They could deduct that against their income. They're taking that away. And again, you just go, why? I mean, there's not, it's are we going to discourage people from getting sick? It's a little wacky, and the logic of putting that in, there in the first place was people don't have the money. So what does it mean? Here's someone who might be earning $50,000, $60,000 a year, suddenly faced with a $30,000 medical bill, and then we're going to hit them with taxes and money they don't have. We know a major cause of bankruptcy in the U.S. is already medical expenses. This is just going to make that worse. So why would you do that?
And I must admit that Bernie Sanders had said that the tax bill, like 80% of the Republican tax breaks would go to the top 1% and 40% of the top 1/10 of 1%. He called it morally obscene.
Yeah, this is a tax bill that's just hugely skewed to the wealthy. And the only real thing, again, you could go piecing through this. There's some things that are, somewhat good for middle-income people. They increased the child tax credit to $1,600. That's a good thing. It's currently $1,000, so they increased it to $1,600. Of course, a lot of the people who need it most won't get it because it's not fully refundable. But a lot of people earning $40,000 a year, they'll come out a little ahead by that. That's a good thing. But the vast majority of the breaks are going to the high end. And basically what they're telling the rest of is don't worry about that because there's going to be so much growth that, you're going to end up with really high wages. You'll end up with much higher wages 2, 3, 4 years out. And again, this is Lucy in the football. I mean, look, how dumb do they think we are?
Well, obviously they think we're very dumb. And the question then is what happens in stage two? This is $1.5 trillion in cuts, which mean that the budget's going to be $1.5 trillion in deficits over 10 years. And stage two will be cutting the budget, Medicaid, Medicare, and so on and so forth.
This is the old trick they always pull that we go back, it's not ancient history, when President Obama was in the White House, they were screaming, oh my God, deficits, 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 horrible. We can't spend money on anything in deficit. We have national debts bankrupting our children. Now they're sitting there, they're going, oh, we're going to have this real big tax cut. And they're saying, don't worry about the deficit because we're going to have this huge growth. And of course we won't have the huge growth, or at least we won't have it because of the tax cut. And then they're going to come back probably 2 years from now, however long it takes. Maybe they won't still be in office at that point, but whatever, let's say they are. And they're going to say, oh my God, we've got to do something. And then it turns out the deficit's worse than we realized. And yeah, what's going to be on the chopping block is going to be Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, food stamps, all the programs that low and middle income people depend on.
Indeed, there was like a $473 billion cut proposed to Medicare. And the Republican budget also, enormous.
Yeah, that's
enormous,
right. They're already talking about it.
Right.
We don't even have to wait 2 years. I mean, that's
exactly
not going to be passed with the tax bill, but it's going to be, it will be in the works.
And the cuts, of course, to education and nutrition and affordable housing. One of the other things I wanted to mention, I was wondering how many more there was. I just caught up with Buried on page 93, presumably, of the 429-page tax proposal was a really interesting provision that would allow fetuses to be named as beneficiaries of college saving accounts known as 529 plans, investment vehicles that come from a range of tax breaks. This is abortion, right? this is a sneak attack through the back door to attempt to establish personhood from the moment of conception. I wonder, have you noticed that? And are you aware of other kind of insidious backdoor social cultural efforts through the tax plan to...
I did notice that. I and some of my friends were noticing that. And yes, it's both a backdoor way to try to establish rights on personhood, as you say. It also is a big tax deduction because this is, the 529 plan is a real scam. I mean, I understand some middle-class people benefit from it, but overwhelmingly the people who are in a position to take advantage of it certainly take full advantage, contribute the maximum. These are relatively high-end earners. So this is yet another way to let them shelter more of their money from taxes, because there it is. You have someone who's 1 month pregnant, and you're going to say, okay, wow, look at that. I could put another however much. I'd have to go back and check what the cap is and shield it from taxes. So that's very cynical.
Well, a lot of people are going to say, yeah, the rich will get most of it, but at least I'll get something. Well, do you think everybody gets something out of this?
Oh, absolutely not. There's been a lot of analyses. I mean, this is a little bit of a moving target because they just came out with this version, Thursday or Friday, and we haven't had a chance to fully analyze it. But there's a lot of middle-income people that will be losers, certainly in New York State, a lot of people that were getting the state and local income tax deduction. They lose that. People who might have had a larger mortgage, $700,000-$800,000, and deducting the interest on that, they lose that. Property taxes, the amount you can deduct for property taxes, that's capped at $10,000. So there's a lot of tax benefits that very middle-income people, and of course I mentioned the medical expense deduction, that they've been taking that would be eliminated under this proposal. So by no means should people assume that, you know, they'll get $300, $400. I mean, we all say, sure, $300 is better than nothing, but a lot of people are going to be looking at paying higher taxes, not lower taxes.
So if the proposal reduces the corporate tax rate to 20% from 35%, politically, what does that really do to our infrastructure over the years to come? You mentioned some of the cuts, but exponentially, how does this affect the environment?
Well, it will really depend what the second round looks like, because obviously their vision is, okay, we'll have these tax cuts. Maybe they actually do think it'll cause growth. Doesn't matter. It's not going to. So we're going to be looking at the deficits, and if they get all the cuts they envision, then we're probably going to be looking at a situation where all the things that are bad today, all the problems with their infrastructure, all the problems with people not getting adequate education, healthcare, nutrition, that's going to be a lot worse, say, 10 years from now. So this is kind of a big step very much in the wrong direction.
The other question has to do, and very, very sure we're running out of time, but the new commissioner of the IRS seems to be a problem in terms of enforcing the tax code, as does budget cuts to the IRS.
That's a really, really important point. I wish I had more chance to talk about it. He just appointed David Carter. He's not the new commissioner. He's going to be the acting commissioner, and the reason why that distinction is important is he doesn't have to make any disclosures. There's no congressional scrutiny. This is a person who has spent his life in the tax avoidance industry, and now he's going to be the head of the tax enforcement agency. You're just opening the door for massive tax fraud, because basically if the IRS isn't prepared to enforce the law, the tax rate's zero. I won't count on you or I not paying anything in taxes, but if you're Robert Mercer, the right-wing billionaire who's involved in a dispute with the IRS that they put at $7 billion now, well, you might end up paying something close to zero taxes.
Well, there'll be much more to talk about, but thank you for this prima. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Yes, the mad clown president, Mr. Trump. Something indeed is rotten in Denmark, and it's the Trumpian tax plan. We've been speaking with Dean Baker, formerly an assistant professor of economics at Bucknell University and currently co-director of the Center for Economic Policy Research in Washington. Thanks so much for the help in understanding what's at stake here. And we'll be speaking to you much more over the weeks and months to come. Thanks.
Thank you.
Dear Mr. President, come take a walk with me. Take a walk with me. Let's pretend we're just two people and you're not better than me. I'd like to ask you some questions if we can speak honestly. What do you feel when you see all the homeless on the street? Who do you pray for at night before you go to sleep? What do you feel when you look in the mirror? Are you proud? say goodbye. How do you walk with your head held high? Can you even look me in the eye and tell me why?
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.